Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your co-host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Glaucoma is one of the leading causes of blindness in the United States, and what really makes this an important illness is the most common form of this disease has no warning signs. As a consequence, the loss of vision can be so gradual that you may not even notice it until it's at a truly advanced stage, and it's really the repair of that damage is not possible. This program is designed to help our listeners learn about glaucoma and determine if they are at risk, and also to learn about some of the pros and cons of various treatment options. Our guest today is Anchorage ophthalmologist and glaucoma specialist, Dr. Kelly Lorenz. Dr. Lorenz got her ophthalmology training, including a fellowship in glaucoma, at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, Michigan. She's been working at Ophthalmic Associates for the last several years here in Anchorage. And by the way, we usually put up the email or contact website of our guests' locations, and the Ophthalmic Associates website is not available at this particular time. So I'm going to go ahead and at this point and give you their phone number if you want to call and make some appointments based on what you hear today. So Ophthalmic Associates, 276-1617. Kelly, welcome to Line One. It's nice to have you here.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
If you hear anything during the comments today and have questions, there's a couple of ways for you listeners to get a hold of us. Our local number, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And as you may well know, our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. So I like to start off, Kelly, by just asking our guests to tell us a little bit about their specific training and also how they get interested in the particular subspecialty. So we'll ask you about your glaucoma training, what it takes, and then what got you into glaucoma.
Sure. Well, I completed my residency in ophthalmology at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit and was lucky enough to work with a great preceptor, a glaucoma specialist by the name of Numan Imami. And after I finished my residency, I decided to proceed with a one-year training program in glaucoma because I knew, first of all, what a fantastic surgeon he was, and I had an opportunity to learn some of these surgical techniques that I already was learning that I enjoyed. And really, before doing a glaucoma subspecialty, I found glaucoma a very confusing area of ophthalmology, and this clarified many things for me.
So why was it confusing?
Because I learned that glaucoma was a group of diseases, not just one entity associated with, it wasn't simply just high eye pressure.
Right. So it's a little bit like we're finding out with diabetes and other illnesses, there's a single endpoint, so to speak. In this case, I'm going to guess you're going to tell me it has something to do with injury to the optic nerve. But there's multiple ways it gets there, and in the past we've called that glaucoma, but there may be multiple mechanisms that get to this problem.
Sure, absolutely. Glaucoma is essentially, it's a group of diseases that cause damage to this optic nerve. That's the nerve connecting the eye to the brain, and high eye pressure is simply a risk factor for this. And when glaucoma is undetected or untreated, it can actually lead to permanent blindness.
In my research for this, I was a little surprised about that. I don't know when it became obvious that it wasn't just all due to pressure, but that was my gestalt, my thought. When did the change in ideas about that happen? Was it during your training or before?
I think it was a little bit before my training and during my training. In fact, not all the answers are completely clear at this point.
Sure, sure. That's true about a lot of medicine.
Yep.
All right, so let's back up, and this is a tough one for guests, especially because we're on the radio, but describe the anatomy and a little bit of the physiology of the eye, particularly as it may relate to what we're going to be talking about today.
Sure. Well, first of all, the eye is an amazing thing. It's a small thing that does such an important job, allows us to see and to process information around us, and it's essentially just a little sack of fluid. I think of it as a little ball, like a balloon, a water balloon, and there's essentially stuff in the front and there's stuff in the back. And right in the middle, there's a little clear ball of jelly called the vitreous. So as for the stuff in the front, you have the cornea, the clear part of the front of the eye, and behind the cornea, there's a space with fluid in it called the anterior chamber. Behind that, then, you have the iris, the colored part of the eye, and the pupil, the little black dot. And right behind the iris, you have the lens of the eye, which focuses light back onto the retina. Now, this space behind the cornea, called the anterior chamber, has this fluid called the aqueous fluid. This is responsible for maintaining the internal pressure of the eye. This fluid is made behind the iris. It travels through the pupil, and it exits out through something called the angle of the eye, or the drainage system of the eye, the trabecular meshwork. This is found where the cornea meets the iris there. Now, this pressure created by the aqueous fluid is transmitted all throughout the eye, even to where that back stuff is. So that back stuff is really the retina in the back of the eye, blood vessels that feed the eye its oxygen and nutrients, and there's that optic nerve, the nerve that's damaged with glaucoma, the nerve that connects the eye to the brain.
All right, and so this anterior chamber fluid is made somehow in the eye, and then it must drain, I assume. So there's a constant flow of this going on. And it's not there to cleanse like the tears in the front of your eye over the top. It's got a purpose of just holding the tension and keeping that eye from collapsing down, so to speak, at least the anterior chamber. That's what you're saying?
That's right. That's its main purpose, although there are elements in that aqueous fluid that provide benefits to different parts of the eye, too. But that is its main purpose.
And then glaucoma is a problem that has something to do with pressures, you're saying, and the flow of this fluid that ends up one way or the other causing some damage to the optic nerve in the back of the eye.
Absolutely. The when there's an imbalance between the fluid created and the fluid that's exiting throughout the eye, usually due to the blockage of that drainage system, the pressure in the eye can build up and can result in damage to that optic nerve.
Mm-hmm. And how does that happen? What's happening exactly? So the pressure builds up in the eye, and it begins to injure some of those fibers. I guess maybe we ought to, I'm thinking, and again, I'm not the best on this neuroanatomy or retinal anatomy, mm-hmm. but the fibers from the optic nerve, which are coming right out of the brain, enter the back of the eye, and then they kind of spread out underneath the retina, and are, that's where those photoreceptors are.
That's right.
That right? Mm-hmm. And so pressure, is it injuring the nerves as they're in the retina, or is it down right where the optic nerve is exiting the eye, or do we know that?
Well, studies think that it's actually injuring the optic nerve where it's down in the eye at a level of the optic nerve. Mm-hmm. There are many levels to the optic nerve at a level called the lamina cribrosa.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And people may not feel that pain necessarily.
Exactly. When someone
that pressure, I should say. Not
sure.
Pain.
When pressure builds slowly over time, as it does in many cases with primary open-angle glaucoma, the eyes can adjust, and it doesn't manifest in any sort of symptoms like pain in the eye.
We've mentioned already that there's multiple causes, and some of these causes I've implied in my introduction can be kind of silent. That's that, I guess you call it open angle. And then there's what we call a closed angle, or I'm not sure that's the right terminology, which is completely different, has different symptoms.
That's right. When you classify glaucoma, I think of it as two broad categories. As you said, open angle glaucoma and angle closure glaucoma. So open angle glaucoma is the most common type in America. There are no known causes for it, although it can be hereditary. Sometimes this drainage system is open, but just isn't functioning properly. But sometimes there may be things like iris pigment, inflammatory cells, blood, or other substances that can clog that drainage system. Mm-hmm. However, in angle closure glaucoma, this is less common in general. However, it's very prevalent here in Alaska due to our Alaska Native populations and Asian populations that are at a higher predisposition for it. Sometimes the iris is blocking this drainage system. Sometimes there's something else like a large cataract or blood vessels, as in uncontrolled diabetes, or even tumors can block that drainage system, causing the pressure to increase.
Before we get into some of this a little bit more detailed, are there some statistics? I mentioned at the beginning that it's one of the leading, if not the leading cause, one of the leading causes of blindness in the United States. And I was referring often to that open angle because because it can be so subtle that people don't notice it until it's pretty far advanced and significant damage to the optic nerve has already happened. But what are some other important bits of information to let people know this is an important thing that we all need to be thinking about?
Sure. But this is important because over 3 million Americans have glaucoma, but only half know they have it. And the total number of suspected cases of glaucoma is over 60 million people worldwide. And it's also the second leading cause of blindness behind cataracts. Glaucoma is also 6 to 8 more times common in the African American population than Caucasian populations. And African Americans are at 15 times more likely to be visually impaired from glaucoma than Caucasians. Now, this is important here in Alaska. This is what drew me up here. Inuit populations from Arctic regions, our Alaska natives, have the highest known prevalence of primary angle closure glaucoma in the world. They are at 20 to 40 times higher than that for Caucasians.
So that's that kind of outlying statistic makes me wonder, of course, is it genetics or environment? And then kind of a subsequent question, do we know whether that's worsening over time or staying the same or improving over
time? Sure. I think it's, for this type of glaucoma, I think it's probably mostly genetics and the way the eye is made, the overall shape of the eye. Mm-hmm. People who are more predisposed to angle closure, such as Alaska natives or certain Asian populations, tend to have a shorter overall eye. What that does is it crowds some of that front stuff structures.
By and shorter, you mean from front to back.
Exactly, okay. Front to back.
Yep.
And so all that stuff in the front is crowded together and potentially closing that angle where the fluid drains.
Right. So drainage is not as easy. Pressure builds up and causes the problem.
That's right.
Does it start earlier in closed angle or in the native or black populations?
Open angle, when you talk about open angle glaucoma, it can start earlier in African Americans.
Okay.
And in fact, it can start at pretty young ages in African Americans.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, as we talk about this, well, let's back up then, because in my mind, I'm trying to clarify, there's the open angle kind and the closed angle. So let's take a second and describe perhaps differences in symptoms. They're both called glaucoma, but they're in a sense different in the mechanisms that come to them. And they're also different, is my understanding, in the symptoms that they may cause.
Yes, that's correct. In most cases of open angle glaucoma, there are no symptoms. It's a quiet disease that produces slowly progressive vision loss, and a person wouldn't know it unless they visit their eye doctor. And in advanced undiagnosed cases, someone may not know it until they actually go blind. Now, in angle closure glaucoma, this can produce a rapid increase in eye pressure, causing symptoms of red eye, pain, nausea and vomiting, glare and halos around lights, and even vision loss. And this can drive people to emergency rooms. If not treated immediately, vision loss can be irreversible. And this is especially problematic here in Alaska, where our native population is predisposed. And then they also tend to live, a lot of them live far away from a medical facility that can recognize and treat it in time.
So one of the things it seems to me that I heard, and you may correct me, that the open angle, the more common form, is slow to develop, no symptoms, may cause lots of damage before it's found, whereas the closed angle is more of an acute problem, and probably patients are more likely to end up getting seen often in the emergency room.
In general, correct.
And it's more urgent in its treatment because of this, because the damage can happen much more rapidly.
Yes, that's correct. Now, there are certain special cases in each group, but in general, yes.
So how good are emergency room physicians at picking up acute glaucoma? I mean, we're talking about red eyes, and as a pediatrician, I see a lot of red eyes that don't have glaucoma.
I've actually been pretty impressed with emergency room treatment of angle closure glaucoma. And when I was at the Native Hospital, I did work with many of the medical centers throughout Alaska to form a little kit that they could have called the angle closure kit of different eye drops and medications they can give a patient to start them on before they then usually life flight them into Anchorage for treatment.
How do they recognize the acute closed or angle closure glaucoma in the emergency room? Are they measuring pressure, or is it based on an exam and history of what's happened?
Well, the ability to measure pressure in some of these medical facilities varies. Sometimes they can measure pressure and know it's elevated, but there are other clues to look for. Along with that, you know, the symptoms that patients experience, red eye, pain, nausea, vomiting, vision loss, you can look for things like a fixed mid-dilated pupil on exam, a hazy cornea. Those are things that look like the eye is kind of angry.
Different than a typical pink eye or red eye with an infection.
Yeah, so a pink eye, you may have a little blurry vision, but the vision loss will be much more profound with angle closure glaucoma. Pink eye tends to be a little more teary and goopy, and you just don't have that with angle closure glaucoma.
And your pupil might respond a little bit.
That's right. Pupil should respond normally with pink eye.
And may have pain in both. I'm just thinking as a pediatrician here.
Yeah, I think of, that's right. I think of pink eye, you have more of a discomfort. The patient may claim, oh, I have a 10 out of 10 pain, but you look at them in the chair and they don't look too uncomfortable. I know when somebody has angle closure and I walk into the room, they're holding a trash can because they're going to feel sick and they're holding their hand cupped over their eye and it's that painful. They're rocking back and forth. It's quite dramatic.
So the picture is, we may talk about it earlier. I've seen it one time in children, which is a little bit unusual, I think. But you're reminding me that there was definitely something different about this little girl who had the glaucoma as an infant. Before we press on here, I want to remind listeners once again, this is Line 1, your health connection. Today, my guest is pediatric ophthalmologist Dr. Kelly Lorenz, and she's also a glaucoma specialist. She's very busy in Alaska, suggesting that we have plenty of glaucoma. And I guess I'm feeling a little bit remiss for not having had another program. I think it's been several years, 4 or 5 years since we've done this. So it's an important program for people to be listening to. If you've got questions or comments about symptoms you have or friends or relatives that you think might need to have the glaucoma evaluated or you just want to ask some questions, here's the way to get a hold of us. Our local number, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. So the ER physicians are pretty good at noticing the acute angle closure glaucoma, primarily because it presents with a fairly uniform picture of pain and nausea and maybe a fixed eye pupil or that doesn't move very much and a red eye usually on one side.
That's right.
Are there environmental factors that may contribute to that?
Sometimes there can be, along with simply the physical factors of the eyeball itself. Certain things may trigger an attack of angle closure glaucoma. Certain lighting situations may trigger certain medications. If someone started a new medication that may trigger angle closure glaucoma, then that can happen too.
Steroids are used quite a bit in inflammatory disorders, and particularly things that I'm involved in with asthma and allergies. Most of them are inhaled in very, very low doses. What's the ophthalmologic point of view on inhaled steroids and the risk of glaucoma? Does that ring any bells with you?
Well, in a certain subset of patients, inhaled steroids or even oral steroids can increase someone's eye pressure, and those predisposed, we call these people sometimes steroid responders, which can lead to glaucoma. Of course, in angle closure, that can be triggered by certain medications as well. You may hear about certain cold medicines or incontinence medicines, antidepressants, sulfa drugs, things like that can also trigger an attack of angle closure. So people who are predisposed would need to be aware of those types of medications.
Are there other factors? I think before we came on the air, you mentioned sometimes inflammatory disorders of the front of the eye, which people may have heard of the term iritis, particularly people that have autoimmune problems can have some inflammatory disorders. Is that a risk factor?
That's right. There are certain conditions that can be risk factors for developing glaucoma. Iritis, sometimes called uveitis, is one of those. There's another disorder called pseudoexfoliation syndrome that can predispose someone. Diabetics who are uncontrolled with their blood sugars can actually develop something called a neovascular glaucoma, where they have many little blood vessels growing along the iris and closes the angle.
Hypertension?
Hypertension has been associated with elevated eye pressures as well. It's not considered one of the major risk factors, but it is associated with elevated eye pressure.
And are there other factors that we need to think about? I guess I'm wondering if age is one, since is it associated with the open versus the angle closure kind or both?
That's right. There are different risk factors, and you can kind of think of them differently between both angle closure and open angle glaucoma. For example, primary open angle glaucoma, increased eye pressure is the major risk factor. Advanced age, especially being over the age of 70 years old, African American race, as we've discussed, having a family history. Having a thin corneal measurement can also predispose you, as well as diabetes and myopia or nearsightedness can be a relative risk factor. Now, for primary angle closure glaucoma, certain ethnicities and races, such as a higher prevalence in Inuits, South Asians, and ethnic Chinese, gender, women tend to develop angle closure glaucoma 3 to 4 times more than men, and this is attributed to their smaller eyes. Again, advanced age with angle closure glaucoma occurring most commonly between the ages of 55 and 65 years old. Hyperopia, people who are farsighted are at risk for this type of glaucoma as opposed to nearsighted with the other, and family history again, too.
Okay. Kelly, we have a couple of callers. Let's see if
sure.
we can get those addressed before we get to our halfway stop in the program. Brad, you're on line one.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm happy to say that when I listened to the beginning of this program and heard the description of what glaucoma is, I realized that whatever it was that was happening with me was not glaucoma. So
that's a relief.
The bad news is that I've been having these sort of like sort of out of the corner of my eye from time to time. It'll be like a little shadow burst, or it's almost as though there's something that I notice over there, but when I look, it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering. I haven't ever had any trouble with my eyes through my entire life. I just started wearing reading glasses about 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm in my 60s. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Is it macular
sure.
degeneration or?
You said this was off to the side in one or both of your eyes.
Typically, I see it in my right eye.
Okay.
And it's almost like there's an ink blot, a very, very small and not very distinct one. Mm-hmm. And when I look, it's gone. I can't focus on it.
You feel like you're kind of chasing it to try to find it in your vision?
Yeah, but it's noticeable. It's something that happens probably, you know, several times a day. I'll notice something off to the side, and when I look, it's gone, and I'll think, oh, that's probably something I had to go see an eye doctor about.
Yeah. It sounds to me like you might have something that we call just a benign floater inside the eye. Sometimes it's called a PVD or posterior vitreous detachment. Sounds scary,
yeah.
Or I just call them benign floaters. And these are.
Well, I like the benign part.
Exactly. Now we have this jelly in the eye, as I mentioned, called the vitreous. And when we're younger, this vitreous is attached to the back of the retina, and that vitreous mass is pretty solid. Now, just as we get older, that vitreous pulls off the back of the retina and can clump up, forming like a little protein clump in that jelly, and that's that floater in there, and I think that's what you're probably noticing.
Okay.
For the most part, they're very benign. However, sometimes when people have a new development of one of these floaters, they may also notice a shower of floaters or flashing lights. And if they notice something like that, you should go to the eye doctor to have it checked out. Every once in a long while, there may be an associated little tear in the retina predisposing somebody to a possible retinal detachment. That's pretty rare. And if you're not noticing flashing lights or a shadow or shade over your vision, just that one floater, it's most likely benign. But anything new, I would encourage you to go for a full eye exam just to make sure that everything is okay.
I'll do that. I'll make sure I go see the doctor before the benign part, is gone.
Exactly. Sounds
Thank
good.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Brad.
You bet.
Gretchen, you're on line one.
I just wanted to encourage everyone to keep up with their annual eye exams. I myself was recently diagnosed as being at risk for closed-angle glaucoma. Mm-hmm. And it started with me back in right before Christmas with some halos, and ran to the eye doctor. They examined me and wanted me in a few weeks later and did the whole diagnosis and treatment. And I'm a white female, not of any Asian or Native descent, but I am farsighted. So I just want to encourage people to not skimp on that, because...
That's great. You really just took the words out of my mouth.
I was going to comment earlier, since particularly it seems this open angle form of glaucoma is pretty symptomless, that I was going to guess that individuals who have eye problems like me and many of us who are seeing eye specialists regularly probably get picked up pretty well. It's the people who don't have a history of eye problems, don't go see an eye specialist, are getting missed until it's late. Is there any evidence that that might be true?
I think so. There's some statistics from the Glaucoma Research Foundation that found that less than half of all adult Americans are receiving a dilated eye exam every couple of years. And that a couple other interesting points is that many people have heard of glaucoma but don't know what it is. And most of those surveyed thought people could tell they had glaucoma due to the symptoms, or that maybe it's easily cured, or that it does not lead to blindness.
All right. Gretchen, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We're halfway through the program right now, and we need to take our normal halfway through break. We have a couple of callers that are still holding. I'll ask them to hang on, and we'll be right back with you. I want to remind listeners again, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address, line1, and you need to spell that out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1@alaskapublic.org. After this very short break, we'll continue our discussion on glaucoma with Dr. Kelly Lorenz of Anchorage. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard, and joining us today on Line 1 and in the studio with me is Anchorage ophthalmologist and glaucoma specialist, Dr. Kelly Lorenz. Our topic is glaucoma, which is one of the more common causes of blindness in the United States. And if you've been listening, we recognize several different mechanisms that may cause this final impath of destruction or injury to your optic nerve and cause blindness. We call this problem glaucoma. There's several ways that may occur, and different kinds of individuals may be at risk. If you have questions or comments, you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433. And we also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. If you're listening between 8 and 9 p.m. on Monday evening, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast, and we can't help you. And by the way, I like to remind people we do have an extensive archive of these programs, and if you tuned in late, you want to get some of the beginning of the program, just go to alaskapublic.org, find the Line 1 link, and you will get to our archives and can listen to this program at your convenience. Dr. Lorenz, let's take a couple more calls here.
Sure.
We got Don on the air. Don, what can we do for you?
I'm over 70 to start with. I'm an avid food supplement buff. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there is anything like lycopene or lutein or eating a lot of tomatoes or something we can do personally on our own level for prevention or staving it off or delaying it as far as glaucoma and the rest of it is concerned.
Sure. That's a really good question. I get that all the time, probably every day in my clinic. And certainly lots of tomatoes and lycopene aren't going to hurt. And studies have shown that that's been good for the retina. And you see these eye vitamins out on the market for things like macular degeneration. I figure they won't hurt for glaucoma either. But there are some interesting studies out there on some alternative type therapies that I don't think I would use to replace glaucoma therapy, but these are things that may be done in addition to treatment. And a couple of things may be, there are a few studies on vitamin C, which may lower eye pressure, although in large amounts. Sometimes people can't take the 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams of vitamin C that it would take to lower eye pressure because it can cause bowel problems, but there's a couple studies out there on that. Ginkgo biloba has been found to increase blood flow to the eye, which may be beneficial in people with a subset of glaucoma called normal pressure glaucoma. Additional turmeric and omega-3 fatty acids have shown benefit. There's an interesting study on over 600 African-American women with open-angle glaucoma showing that servings of 2 to 3 times a month of kale and collard greens also will help lower eye pressure. As well, fresh oranges, not orange juice, and fresh peaches, not canned peaches, and blueberries can also help lower eye pressure. And there's also one interesting study. It's a Japanese study. It was small, but it's a double-blinded placebo-controlled study using a component of black currants versus placebo. And over 2 years, the group that took the black currants found that their visual field testing stabilized over time, whereas the group taking a placebo actually had further deterioration of their visual fields. And finally, good old-fashioned exercise. Moderate exercise over time can result in lowering eye pressure, sometimes lasting several months.
Yes, that's quite enlightening. I noticed a lot of it goes in line with a few other things like varicose veins and whatnot, especially when it comes to the exercise.
Yep.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Don, what I'm hearing is, and I just want people to be careful here, is that exercise, eating well, including lots of fruits and vegetables, is generally pretty useful advice for health.
It's the boring advice, the typical advice, but that's everyone knows it to be true, right?
All right. Let's do one more here. We got Gary that's got a question about ocular migraine, it sounds
sure.
like. Gary?
Yeah. Gary here. I've had ocular migraines since I'm in my 60s now. Mm-hmm. It's that sparkly, you know, I used to call it flicker flash. Because it was kind of flickering and flashing, and it's there, and it's not there, and you can't really see it. Has that got anything to do with glaucoma? And second question would be, as a, you know, an old wives' tale that smoking pot relieves eye pressure, is that true or not?
All right. I'll take the first question first with the ocular migraines. I don't know of any connection between ocular migraines and glaucoma, even though sometimes people can feel a pressure over that side of their head or their eye after having one of these episodes of typically people describe, you know, sort of moving or scintillating lights off to the side of their vision that can last anywhere between 5 and 30 minutes, and then it goes away, and maybe you have a low grade headache, but you don't have that typical classical migraine headache afterwards. And
correct.
I have not found that there's any connection to glaucoma with this. The ocular migraines, they can be very scary when you have them. I've had them before,
yeah.
and the first time I had one, I thought I was having a stroke. But then they realize they're actually fairly benign and not associated with glaucoma. Your second question. I get this is another question I get every day in my clinic about marijuana. Now, you hear a lot about marijuana and people with glaucoma smoking marijuana, but moderately long-term studies have shown that cannabis has no proven effect on glaucoma. However, when ingested, marijuana does produce about a 20% decrease in pressure, but that decrease is really only for a very short period of time, so you'd have to be smoking it or taking it off and on all day long. Now, I've had more than one patient tell me that would not be a problem for them, but I don't think I'd want to trade glaucoma for something like lung cancer, because there are some dangerous things in glaucoma and in marijuana too.
Okie doke. Thanks very much for your call. Brenda, what can we do for you?
Oh, I'm calling from Deering. When I first got my glasses, like in 1975, I was diagnosed with glaucoma, and I had to see the eye doctor like every 6 months and then every year and get my pressure checked every year.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2003, I was diagnosed with diabetes, and I have to get my eyes checked every year for that. And I was just wondering if those two kind of work against each other, and I'll hang up and listen to you on the radio. Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling, Brenda.
That's another good question. We used to think that people just with a diagnosis of diabetes, really it didn't have anything to do with glaucoma, but now several studies have shown that diabetes is actually a relative risk factor for glaucoma, and there is some interplay between a diagnosis of diabetes and glaucoma. Now, if diabetes, someone has diabetes uncontrolled for a very long period of time, this can cause a very severe type of glaucoma called neovascular glaucoma. That's a little more of an unusual type. It's more of a closed-angle type rather than that open, typical open-angle type of glaucoma we've been talking about.
Okay. Let's try another phone call. We got two more, and then I definitely want to spend some time on treatment. Millie, you're on line one.
Hi. I have narrow-angle glaucoma. I've always had low pressure in my eyes of 10 to 15 in both eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I also have cataracts in the center and around the edges of each eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told to have cataract surgery because the pressure of the cataracts is pressing against and making the narrow angle narrower. Is that the correct course of action?
Well, there's a couple things that you can do when you're predisposed to angle closure glaucoma. And I'm sure during an eye exam, they probably looked with a special mirror called a gonioscopy lens at the internal drainage system of your eye. And if it looks like somebody's predisposed, there are really two routes to take. There's an in-office laser procedure called a YAG PI or a YAG peripheral iridotomy that can help prevent angle closure glaucoma. However, if someone has a cataract forming, another definitive way to eliminate someone's risk for angle closure glaucoma is removal of that cataract. And these days, it's probably split 50-50. Some doctors prefer to do the laser over the cataract surgery, and some say, well, I'm going to do the laser and then later on just take the cataract out as that develops, so I may as well just take the cataract out first and be done with it. So there's no wrong answer there as far as having laser versus cataract surgery if you are determined to be predisposed. Either one will help eliminate that risk.
Are there some individual preferences that she might have? So what I'm hearing you say is there's two approaches. So this gets into what I think of as a discussion with the patient about their preferences about any treatment versus each one individually. Is there one thing that might lead you one way or the other in your suggestion?
Absolutely. You always want to discuss the risks versus the benefits of any procedure with your patient. And it's important to discuss, if you have a cataract, is this cataract also impairing your vision on a daily basis? Is it bothersome enough to take out? Sometimes if someone just has a little baby cataract forming, I'll suggest the laser because the risks of the in-office laser tend to be less than that for more invasive cataract surgery. If someone has more of a dense cataract and it looks like, they're complaining about difficulty seeing to do some of the things they want to do throughout the day, then we'll decide together to take the cataract out.
I have a follow-up question. They
sure.
said they wouldn't give me eye drops so they could see my optic nerve because of that. They were afraid that that narrow angle would, the drops would precipitate the narrow angle closure.
That's a good point. When someone is diagnosed as being at risk for angle closure glaucoma, you do not want to be dilated. So sometimes dilation drops can trigger an attack of acute angle closure glaucoma. So if you've been told that in the past, don't let anybody come near you with a dilating drop unless you've had the laser done or a cataract surgery.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So sounds like I'm in good hands.
sounds like they're doing the right thing there.
Thank you.
Good luck, Nellie. Brad, we're going to take you as our last call here for a little bit and see if we can talk about some treatment, but what can we do for you? Oh, all right, I think Brad is gone. So let's talk about treatment a little bit. What are the options for treatment? And I always like to make sure our listeners are always thinking about what's the risk of doing them and what's the risk of not doing them. So let's talk about risk and benefit ratios.
Sure. When somebody's been diagnosed with glaucoma, there are really three broad categories of treatment: medications, lasers, some of which can be done in the office, some in the operating room, and traditional surgery for glaucoma when, the medications and lasers aren't working or aren't lowering the eye pressure enough. Now, most people can be maintained on one or more types of eye drops for glaucoma. They all work to lower eye pressure, some reducing the amount of fluid produced in the eye and some by increasing the outflow of fluid from the eye. And medications out of the three are the least risky, but they may cause things like local allergy and irritation, itching and redness, and some can less commonly cause systemic side effects such as exacerbation of underlying asthma, fatigue, or even depression. Now, if medications aren't controlling the eye pressure adequately or the glaucoma appears to be progressing on visual field testing, then sometimes we suggest a laser procedure. And there are a couple types that I do in the office, rather. I think we touched upon it earlier, for people at risk for angle closure glaucoma, one option is to do a laser called a YAG PI, or peripheral iridotomy. What this does is place a tiny microscopic hole in the colored portion of the eye, the iris. And this allows fluid that's made behind the iris to escape through that hole, deepening the front of the eye and opening up that drainage system. And that eliminates that risk for angle closure glaucoma. And we do this very often around here, at least a couple times a week or so.
It's like putting a tube in the ear for somebody who has a lot of children have ear problems.
That's right.
Able to allow pressure changes to occur.
That's right.
So not much risk.
Yeah, not too much risk. You can have a little risk of inflammation, a little bleeding. There might be a transient rise in eye pressure. Most of the side effects can be treated preemptively with an eye drop.
Okay. And when the medicine and the lasers don't work,
then sometimes we proceed to glaucoma surgery. And there are a few different categories of glaucoma surgery. However, the traditional glaucoma surgery, the gold standard, is a filtering surgery called a trabeculectomy. That's where a tiny hole is made in the white part of the eye, the sclera, which allows fluid, that aqueous fluid from the front of the eye, to escape through that tiny white hole under a flap, and then it collects under the outer covering of the eye, the conjunctiva. And then, of course, the body takes that fluid away. This is very effective at lowering eye pressure, but not without risks of any surgery to the eye. Any surgery to the eye, there's a small risk of things like pain, bleeding, infection, the pressure being too high or too low, and even loss of vision. So these surgeries are reserved for people who I fear are losing vision, or will definitely lose vision if we don't do the surgery. And this trabeculectomy has been done as the gold standard for glaucoma surgery over the past 50 years, and it's very reliable. A newer type of surgery that I sometimes do is called a glaucoma tube shunt. I reserve this mainly for people in whom I think a trabeculectomy may have a high chance of scarring over and failing, or just aren't good candidates for the traditional gold standard. In this surgery, there's a physical tube, a clear little tube that's smaller than the tip of a pin, is inserted into the front of the eye behind the cornea into that aqueous fluid, and it shunts that fluid back towards a plate that's placed over the eye in the back of the orbit, and then that fluid percolates over that plate and is taken away. And again, it doesn't tend to lower pressure as well as the trabeculectomy, but it does a pretty good job, and it's a very reliable surgery.
Tell me how the medications work. What's the mechanism there? Are they decreasing fluid? Are they increasing the removal of fluid or both?
A little bit of both, depending on what drops you're using. Right. And oftentimes, I'll have to use more than one eye drop in somebody, and I'll choose one that decreases fluid production, and then I'll choose one from another family that increases outflow, and they both work together to lower eye pressure.
And generally, that's successful in a fairly good percentage of patients?
I'd say that in a majority of the majority of patients can be controlled with eye pressure lowering medications.
Mm-hmm. Let me give our location again and telephone numbers. Again, line one, your health connection is what you're listening to. We're talking with Dr. Kelly Lorenz, an ophthalmologist that practices at Ophthalmic Associates. That number is 276-1617 if you wanted to contact her office. And we're talking about glaucoma. If you've got questions or comments, our local number, 550-8433. 550-8433. Toll free 1-888-353-5752. And our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We've got just about 10 or 12 minutes left if you've got questions or comments. You mentioned before you came on the air to me that there are two of you at Ophthalmic Associates that are really glaucoma specialists. Mm-hmm. And despite you or those two of you doing a lot of work and staying very busy, there's a lot of general ophthalmologists that are doing some of the medication management, suggesting to me there is one heck of a lot of glaucoma going on.
Well, from a perspective of a glaucoma specialist, I feel like everyone out there has glaucoma. But we're actually very lucky here, well, throughout Alaska, but especially in Anchorage, that not only Dr. Elizabeth Morgan and I specialize in glaucoma as ophthalmologists, but we have a good set of general people or people who subspecialize in even other parts of the eye, but still treat glaucoma patients. And we have a great group of optometrists here in town who do a wonderful job of treating medical glaucoma, and I'm developing a great relationship with a lot of them. And if there's any questions or need for things like laser or surgery, then I'm happy to see them at any time.
I'm not sure we spent much time or any really on talking about the diagnosis of glaucoma in an ophthalmologic office. We mentioned the word, the pressure. We mentioned that they may have loss of some vision. Can we be a little bit more specific on what an exam for glaucoma might entail?
Sure. There are actually what I consider five main tests to determine whether somebody has glaucoma or discern somebody's glaucoma risk. The first one being eye pressure. We've talked about that. The other is direct observation of the optic nerve, assessing its color and its shape. Visual field testing, formal visual field testing, looking at the peripheral vision and specific patterns of vision loss. That's actually the gold standard of diagnosis of glaucoma and following its potential progression.
So by visual field is the what you see when you're looking straight ahead, what you can see and on the outside of the middle of your eyes. And it's so specific that you can be pretty sure it's glaucoma depending on how that vision is lost on the periphery.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it, some of it depends on patient performance in this automated machine that tests your peripheral vision or how the machine is set up. But yes, you can see many different patterns of loss that can be very specific, even for specific types of glaucoma, and there are various names for every single one of them.
All right. And aging by itself does not cause a significant amount of peripheral vision loss?
No, not typically.
Okay. Just out of curiosity. Mm-hmm. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. Okay. So let's see. We covered eye pressure, observation of the optic nerve, formal visual field testing. Another one is observation of that drainage system of the eye. That's called gonioscopy, where we numb up the eye and hold a little mirror up to the eye. That's the only way we can see that internal drainage system, that trabecular meshwork, and determine, we use that to determine whether somebody may have an open angle or closed angle form of glaucoma. Another test is also measuring the thickness of the cornea, because that has the potential to affect our eye pressure measurements as well. We have another ancillary test called an OCT, and this is essentially a picture of the optic nerve in the back of the eye, and it has the ability to measure the nerve fiber layer thickness of the optic nerve. And this is not used so much to diagnose glaucoma as it is to follow its progression over time.
And we mentioned at the beginning, I'm sorry for interrupting you, that sure. damage to those nerves is, I said, generally permanent. Is that true? I think I've alluded to that, and I don't think we ever got around to asking you whether some of that might be reversible or not.
That's, in general, very true. Once those nerve fibers are lost, they're lost forever. And the optic nerve is made up of over a million little nerve fibers. And as that glaucomatous damage occurs, little chunks of these nerve fibers die off, robbing you of portions of usually your peripheral vision first. And if left untreated, it can encroach onto the center of the vision and lead to blindness.
Mm-hmm. Fred, what can we do for you?
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm down here in Seward. I have a question. I use, it's a formula, it's an herb formula. I use it for, you know, preventative stuff. It's called Eyebright formula, and mm-hmm. on the bottle, it stings quite a bit, and, you know, but I've been using it for some years now, and just wanted to know what the doctor thought about it. It's got cayenne in it, it's mm-hmm. got fennel seed, golden seal root, cayenne, and mm-hmm. the label's kind of blurred on the other one, but you know, it says to increase up to a certain amount. I don't use the max because it stings quite mm-hmm. a bit. It seems to refresh in the eyes. I was just wondering I've never had any adverse effects to it. I was just wondering your thoughts on using something like this.
Sure. I'm guessing it's the cayenne that's probably causing the stinging in the eye.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I never really thought about asking anybody about, you know, what they thought about using it. I mean, I bought it out of a store in Anchorage. They still have
yeah.
it there.
Anyway. I'm not sure what does it purport to do? Does it help with dry eye or simply refreshing the eye?
You know, it really doesn't say. I just, on my own, picked it up some years back, but it seems like it just refreshes my use it at least twice a day to three times a day sometimes, but... like I say, just use it for preventative stuff. You know, I don't know. It makes my eyes feel good.
Sure. Yeah. You know. I can't really speak to that. I'm going to have to look that up. I'm not sure about. I'll have to look up those ingredients.
Okay. Anyways, it's called Eyebright Formula, but it's the title on it. It says herbs that work, and then
all right.
Eyebright Formula is underneath. Anyways,
I will look it up.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for your call. I'm going to take just a second to address a little bit of what Fred had to say. I've been looking for the opportunity. First, it's very important for people to understand that over-the-counter preparations of herbs and medications are not FDA approved. They have not gone through the evidence that to document that they are both safe and effective like prescription drugs. That's the first thing. Second, there have been a number of studies now that have looked at the contents of these over-the-counter products, and oftentimes they have much less of the active ingredients than it says on the label, and in addition, they have other products there that are not on the label. So you need to be aware of that. I think it's very important. I've had physicians that I know say they've stopped taking any kind of over-the-counter, even vitamins, unless there is some evidence of that the product in the bottle is what is said. And the only thing that I know of that may give you some assurance of that is a pharmaceutical company's agreement to put a USP shield on the front of their bottles, which says that they are voluntarily trying to assure the customer that what's in the package is there. I'm not sure how that's followed up on. I recently spent some time in Costco looking at all their vitamins and herbs and so forth, and was a little bit, at least pleasantly surprised to see that the USP shield was on all of those products. I am not an expert on this, and I would suggest people look at the pros and cons of these over-the-counter products. They can be they can have their own risks over and above what they seem to purport. So let's get back to glaucoma after that editorial comment I've been waiting to make.
There's no substitution for a healthy diet, huh?
Yeah, right. All right, so I alluded, I think, at the beginning of the program also, and by the way, we only have about 3 or 4 minutes, glaucoma in a child. My recollection, this was 15, 20 years ago, two mm-hmm. or 3 or 4 years old, red eye, one side, painful is my recollection. How common is that, and what's different about that problem?
Sure. Well, babies can be born with glaucoma. It's relatively rare, but happens in about 1 out of every 10,000 born in the United States. As we said, young adults can also get glaucoma, especially African Americans are susceptible at a younger age. And in contrast to adults, there can be signs to look for when a baby or young child has glaucoma. A newborn may have tearing, light sensitivity, and squeezing shut the eyelids. There may be overall enlargement of the eyeball, which we call bouphthalmos, or an enlarged hazy cornea may occur as well. Now, in these types of glaucomas in babies, congenital glaucoma, the difference between adults and children is, as first-line therapy, we recommend surgery rather than eye drops. Regardless, these people, their patients need to be followed closely with eye exams, really, for the rest of their lives, though.
All right. So we've got just about 2 minutes, so we can leisurely take our time getting off the air. But what I'd like to do is have you give us some ideas, some thoughts that you want people to come away from the program with. What do you want people to remember about glaucoma?
Sure. Well, I think if you've been diagnosed with glaucoma, you may need to visit your eye doctor pretty frequently, every week or month until the eye pressure is controlled. And after that, it's typical to see your eye doctor about 3 to 4 times a year to ensure that this therapy is still working. Understand there's no cure. Glaucoma can be controlled and vision loss prevented as long as you keep taking your eye drops prescribed and visit your doctor. A good working relationship with your doctor is important. You should feel that he or she is listening to you and addressing your needs. Trust your doctor that is acting in your best interest, but also realize you have a right to seek a second opinion. Live a healthy, active lifestyle and don't smoke. Continue to make plans and enjoy life. You're only limited by what you think you can or cannot do. And this is also your opportunity to teach others about glaucoma. So encourage friends and family to have their eyes checked regularly. Get screened with a thorough eye exam so you can't treat a disease you don't know you have. And just keep in mind there are no signs or symptoms of this disease until significant vision loss has already occurred. And that loss of vision from glaucoma is irreversible, but again, in most cases are controlled by medications, laser, or surgery.
It seems to me that this is, again, if I look at what I'm doing, this is one of the more important problems, particularly in this population, that I ought to be every year or two addressing. I'm amazed that I haven't come back to it. I'm amazed that I'm not as familiar with the need for discussing glaucoma.
Yeah, I think it's important, especially as people get older, over the age of 50, you should probably have an eye exam every year or two with mm-hmm. any risk factors. You may be asked to see your eye doctor every 6 to 12 months, and with multiple risk factors or someone I deem at high risk, I may even see them more often.
Yep. I have my own eye problems. I'm being seen every year, and I know I get my eye pressures checked and looked at. So thanks very much.
Absolutely.
So my thanks to today's guest, Anchorage ophthalmologist Dr. Kelly Lorenz. If you want to continue this conversation on glaucoma, you can join KSK on Facebook, and you can find that link on our website, alaskapublic.org. Everybody's heard of first aid and CPR, but many people don't realize mental health first aid also helps us get the skills needed to assess people experiencing mental health related issues. And mental health first aid teaches people about risk factors and warning signs. Next week, the co-host Prentice Pimperton will be here, and the program will be discussing mental health first aid. That's Monday, January 25th at 2 p.m. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer at Alaska Public Media. Eric Bork is our audio engineer and web editor. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.